Across the galaxy, the Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2005 through 2008.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you all things Star Wars animation. Once again, focusing on the Clone Wars micro series from a few years back for our summer programming. And joining me, as will be all summer long, are Jen.
Hello.
Nathan.
Hello.
Jerry.
Hey there.
And Barrett.
Hey, everybody, this is Barrett, Master Collect Them All from the Forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer. Mount up! That was my Obi-Wan.
Because I just happen to have a bunch of Lancer ships in the back.
They're still spiking tanks in this one.
Yes, that's right, and we're going to jump right into it. As we did, we kind of talked about this our first episode. It is a lucky thing that Obi-Wan managed to slip that order for all those speeder bikes past Yoda. Isn't it? You think he put it in with his vacation request, so when Yoda was just going down signing all the forms?
Sure. Yes. Of course.
Oh, it's great. That's exactly how it would have happened. I mean, you know, I just imagine all the clones around him, you know, when Obi-Wan says mount up, they have to like look at him and say, You mean we have some of those? What?
I figure this is probably the same order where they got the one or two or however many it was little folding up looking speeder bikes that they had aboard the Twilight during the Mortis episodes. That somehow when they're transported to that other dimension, all of a sudden they've got the swoops they can use. When they have the exact same thing happen, Obi-Wan uses it, but Anakin seems to be running across the surface of the whole planet. It's a trend we keep seeing.
You think he had to order so many of the regular swoops to get the fold up
there
one.
You go. It's like the local shop incentive. Yeah,
we have those. I just got that, Jerry. That's funny.
We have some of those. But you notice not only did they have them, but they're like custom choppers.
Yes,
they
have the Clone Wars front on them.
Yeah, they're designed to look like a clone helmet, like Orange County made them or something.
Orange County choppers, right? They look like choppers. And speaking of the clone helmet, was this a different version of the clone armor? Because I thought the helmets were episode 2-ish, but they were more square-jawed, and they looked like they had vents on the side. So I'm not sure if that was just the stylized take on the Clone War armor, or if we're actually seeing actually a new type of armor.
I don't think it was meant to be a new type of armor, but when we see the characters like Abel, I think it's Abel 472, we get that kind of cool stylized look to it, but I think that was just meant to be, you know, this is the episode 2 type of armor given a Tartakovsky twist.
Did anybody else have difficulty with like the tactical applications of what they're doing here? Like, I know it looked really kind of epic with these two armies like charging at each other, but why? I feel like as a tactician, someone else should just been like, get the really big gun and just, you know, get rid of the charging army and been done. Like, it doesn't really make sense to me. It's like they abandoned these tactics in the, you know, Middle Ages with on planet Earth. Like, we don't do this anymore because it doesn't work. So it was visually very cool, but it didn't. I had a very hard time suspending my disbelief for this.
Yes, it is questionable. Why does a biker scout on a speeder bike hit a tree and explode into flame, but a droid on a speeder bike runs into a tank and tank blows up? How exactly does that work out for you?
Well, I'm wondering why it is that Dirge can use his and slam it into a tank and cause it to blow up, but when these seem to be hitting characters, the characters don't just explode into a bunch of far less appropriate goo than Dirge.
Or Dirge doesn't end up with like 20 on the end of his lance. Crickets, crickets, crickets.
Now, I will say, I do like, I mean, yeah, it's goofy, But it's got a great visual flair to it. I mean, they're kind of going for that sort of bizarre aspect to this micro series. I mean, the few places where they do exaggerate it, they do tend to exaggerate it quite a bit, like with Dirge himself. I mean, look at Obi-Wan. He's wearing clone armor with the cape, and it's like a cross between his regular clothing and that. He even puts on a helmet when they hop onto these crazy souped-up swoops. I mean, it's just stylized combat. It's just like where you have Lucas talking about how he models the Battle of Yavin after old footage from the World War combat. And here you've got them based on basically, you know, not gladiatorial. What would they call this? Jousting style combat that we see here. You know, it's jousting given a Star Wars flair, given all the classical civilization things that Star Wars uses. I'm surprised we haven't seen this more often in Star Wars. Tactics aside.
Oh, it was definitely visually striking. I mean, come on. That's why so many people clamored for Dirge on that speeder bike. And Obi-Wan, well, we didn't get him on a speeder bike with the armor, but Obi-Wan in the armor. And then the Lancer droid, and we didn't get those on the speeder bike. But that, I mean, it's very striking visually. It looks pretty cool. It's not realistic. But then again, we're how many episodes into the series? We're not going to get realistic anytime soon. So it's all right. We should just suspend our disbelief and move on.
Well, we certainly did get the near iconic version of Obi-Wan from this, though, with the armor, the cape. I mean, it's very unique. And I think, you know, with all the statues and mini busts, and they made a couple action figures. And even when they did these things poorly, they got a lot of outcry from people. And I remember that original statue, the prototype or the mock-up shown, looked gorgeous. It had a really good likeness of Ewan McGregor. And when it came out, it didn't look so good. And people were really upset at that. So this was a pretty, people really liked this look. I remember going to Celebration 3 and seeing at least one person, if not more, costuming with this armored cape Obi-Wan look.
You know, it's not even just the iconic look of Obi-Wan. I mean, they really do a good job in this episode of giving a sort of an iconic Clone Wars butt kicker Obi-Wan, because a lot of the Clone Wars stories have a tendency to make him out to be, you know, he's this great duelist, but you don't always see it, you know? He's the one that they want to send after Grievous because he's the best. And yeah, you see it from time to time, but for the most part, you know, you take him and Anakin, put them up against each other in the Clone Wars era, at least, prior to Revenge of the Sith, and, you know, it's a toss-up who's going to wind up coming out on top of that sort of thing. It's just one of those things where it's assumed but doesn't appear. But here, I mean, with or without his lightsaber, he's kicking butt. I mean, he's slashing up things on Dirge. He stabs Dirge. Even after Dirge stands up from being stabbed, he uses the Force to block the darts or whatever it is. He uses the Force to push away the fire. He uses the Force to crush the flamethrower on Dirge's arm. Gets his lightsaber back. Fights Dirge when he's got those weird, kind of cool Force field shields, I guess, kind of built into his arm. Then he hacks Dirge up into pieces, hops on his speeder, and zips away and pulls a Superman to get on top of the tower and rejoin his troopers. I mean, granted, this series has to be quick in its action because it had such a small time frame in which for each episode to air. But even without the speeding things up aspect, I mean, this is Obi-Wan at his most butt-kicking that really finally makes you say, wow, yeah, no wonder they sent this guy after Grievous. But you don't get that most places.
Yeah, that's one thing that our current Clone Wars series doesn't do. They seem to focus more on he's referred to as the negotiator. He's the negotiator. When we see him finally get into it in episode one, I mean, he drops Maul. Now he's beating the devil out of Dooku. So yeah, Obi-Wan is pretty much the man when it comes to the saber. When he actually gets pushed to the point where it is time to start getting violent, then Obi-Wan can get just as violent as anybody else.
You know, in the regular series, I mean, or the current series, I mean, you could possibly give him the same type of nickname that Mina Bonteri's son gave to Ahsoka. You know, all talk, no action.
And he's all action. You're right. Obi-Wan is the man. If you want somebody taken care of, you send Obi-Wan. Like you said, he took out Maul. He's taken out the Acklay. You know, he's sent to take out Dirge. He's sent to take out Anakin. I mean, Obi-Wan is the man, and I like seeing him. And, you know, I have to agree with Jerry. This is the iconic Obi-Wan Kenobi. In control, very powerful, fearless. You know, this is the episode one Obi-Wan that we all know and love. And he's all grown up and kicking butt. And I love it.
So we've already hinted at it, but Obi-Wan puts down Dirge, or at least he thinks that he has, and goes to rejoin his troops in a very Superman-like move, driving his speeder bike up the side of the building and then jumping off at the last second.
Apparently, he got that requisition form filled out. Now he just doesn't care if he crashes, like, military supply.
Yeah, can't you wait to see the debriefing from that one? Yoda snap at him. He just cleared that order for 10,000 speeder bikes, and oh, you've got none left. And you need more.
My money is on that it landed on that little creature they shot at earlier.
I like the visual of Yoda sitting behind the desk with the glasses going through the papers and, you know,
trying to balance the budget for the department. Yeah.
We're paying for it. You're paying by the blaster now. Listen, Gene, you don't do the budget. You know, it's like, total, you know, that's why you can't see the dark side looming over, because he's worried about budgets. It's that's a
desk,
funny.
I am carpal tunnel. Yes. I am getting.
See, that goes right back to some of the things we talked about in season three here, where the Jedi weren't standing on their cruiser just outside of jump distance to come into the Citadel, because they were all back on course because they'd used up their travel budget.
Red ink clouds everything.
I'm balancing the budget. You are. Be as reckless. You are not.
That's a really good Yoda. Wow.
Tom, yes, Kane, what are you doing here?
Can I have more, Yoda? You only take what you bring with you.
It kind of explains why Anakin keeps souping up his own starfighter and such, though, you know, because there must not be a repair budget.
And why they're always complaining when they lose their lightsabers. Oh, my master's gonna kill me.
Do you know how much that thing costs?
50 grand. But I digress.
Anakin, do you want to be a slave again? No? Then you better take care of it.
But, you know, how cool was it when you see Obi-Wan lose his helmet, which, by the way, I don't know how he lost his lance and his helmet without his head being in it, but okay, fine. It happened on screen, right? And he kind of just wipes his chin and then brings out the lightsaber, and you're just kind of thinking, why didn't you start with that? Because, you know, that's better than just a stick.
See, I took that as they actually were trying to not make us necessarily think that was Obi-Wan, because that had my son fooled when he first saw it. He didn't realize it was Obi-Wan until he lost the helmet. He just thought it was some big, bad clone commander or clone general who their top rider who got to wear a cloak, and then off comes the helmet and oh, it's Obi-Wan underneath. Booyah.
Well, it's like, you know, it's the riding division of the clone troopers, and he's just thinking, all right, finally we get to go out and battle.
Months of training finally pay off.
This is the part I was born to play, baby.
Now, we talked about the battle and how he sort of leaves Dirge defeated. And, of course, Dirge is going to come back once they get into the command center. But am I the only one that when Dirge starts coming back together and you got the weird little kind of feelers out there kind of wiggling around and then it comes back together, that literally, it gives me a sense that if I watch that enough times, I would literally vomit. That, for some reason, just grosses me out on some fundamental level. No joking. This time, I mean, really, it grosses me out, and it doesn't look gross. I mean, it's not something I look at and go, ooh, that's disgusting, but something fundamental about the way that's animated causes me to have a revulsion towards it.
And I think the animators would probably say, thank you for that compliment. It's probably what they're going after.
Considering some of the things that they've gone on to do, which are blatantly revolting, yeah, I'd say that's this was a testing ground for them.
Okay, Jen. I know you're with me on this one. That was a WTF moment. Like, what? I don't know anything about Dirge, but what is with that?
Yeah, I have a really... there are characters like this all throughout, like, all science fiction. I hate them every time they come up. Because it's always just like, oh, he's gonna sew himself back together. I have a... because of my biology background, I have a really hard time buying this, like, I guess it would be a colony of wormy things that are... hive mind intelligence, or I don't understand how it works. I don't understand how, like, they don't seem to be affected by, you know, burnt tissue and blaster guns. And I have a very hard time suspending my disbelief for characters like this, and it annoys me because it's too powerful almost. He's kind of a broken character, and I don't really like it. It makes him less fun. He's not there's no skill involved. He's just this big brute, and I don't really care for him. But and that scene, though, it always reminds me of, like, muscle tissue knitting together. It's the thing you were describing, Nathan. It is kind of gross.
You know, speaking of how it makes him almost indestructible, do you guys know how Dirge finally does meet his fate? Has anybody read Obsession? They literally launch him into a star. It's the only way to destroy him. That's pretty badass.
I thought you were going to say they had to pull out the kryptonite.
No. You know, they basically treat him like the T-1000, only in an extreme. They literally launch him into a star. And it's actually one of the coolest knockdown, drag-out battles of the Clone Wars in the Dark Horse Comics interpretation of it. Unfortunately, who knows how much of that's going to stand and in what form. But Dirge's final acts and the way he looks unhelmeted in the comic book series, it's really kind of a butt-kicking scene.
I just wish they had picked a different creature to have be this badass character, though, because I can't buy this, like, worm conglomerate as this badass character, because, like, just the way they animate him, he looks like he's just these tubes of fluid, and they're hitting him with blasters and all this stuff, and I feel like he should just be going squish, and it I don't get it.
So let's talk about that clone attack on Dirge. They were kind of pulling out all the stops, but some of the things was a little bit ridiculous. Why would you mount your I'm blanking on the term here. Why would you stick the line that you are sliding down into your target?
And where were they sliding down from? And boy, weren't those cables really, really steady given the fact that Dirge was flailing around fighting them, and yet they're still sliding on them, and they're drawn exactly straight.
Well, my favorite part was when Obi-Wan was inside of Dirge and Fordo shoots a line to electrocute Dirge with Obi-Wan inside.
Oh, that was badass, though. Oh, yeah,
I love that. That's so great.
But Obi-Wan awesome. Should have been fried.
That was great. All that, and then he just stops, flicks his wrist, and has that built-in taser.
Right. And Obi-Wan's fine.
The idea of the way that Obi-Wan gets out of it, that where Obi-Wan basically uses the Force to just pop Dirge, that felt a little Looney Tunes-y to me. That was where, I mean, I can buy the rest of the stuff with Dirge, and yeah, it's kind of gross the way that his body is coming back together and such. And yeah, he's very cartoony in the way that they portray him here. But none of that stuff really threw me out of the episode. While I was watching, I was just like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a cartoon. But having Obi-Wan basically blow him up from the inside and then make a quip about making a mess when everyone around him should be throwing up in their helmets. I don't know. I was sitting there going, ugh. It didn't seem to fit the tenor or the tone, I guess, of the rest of the series. It felt like the rest of it tried to be cartoony in exaggeration, but still somewhat more serious in tone, and that just took it over the line into Looney Tunesville, you know, Tom and Jerryville for me.
And that is why, to this day, Obi-Wan never leaves the house without a bag of Pop Rocks.
But then why all of a sudden was Dirge able to be like Mr. Fantastic, the way he's able to just, like, throw his muscles and his body and all that tissue out like it's, like, you know, like Mr. Fantastic Plastic Man type thing? It almost seemed like, I guess what takes me out of it a little bit, and I know it's just a cartoon, blah, 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 but we're here to talk about it, so here's my thoughts. It's like the rules change form. It's one thing for you to just reassemble yourself if somebody cuts you up, but now suddenly the rules of your physiology is totally changed. And to me, it just got silly and ridiculous. And every time I watch this series, especially when I watch it on the DVD where it just plays all the episodes straight through and you're not going through the individual episodes, I just shake my head and almost close my eyes and just wait for this one episode to be done.
You know, then that's true, because you've got, I mean, they sort of try to give you that visual cue of, okay, well, he's blasted and his armor is destroyed. So now that he's not in his armor, he can do all these types of things, you know, and we know that it's armor, not just some shape that he's taking, because his face mask falls off and it's armor. It's not goo. But at the same time, early on, well, right after that cool sequence where he's fighting Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan's blocking the darts and the fire and everything, Obi-Wan chops him up and you see him sort of knit himself back together. But the parts we see knitting are still within the armor. Like, you see the stump of an arm and a stump of another part connecting. And granted, the only stuff that's sort of morphing to connect is the fleshy tissue inside the armor, kind of like the arm inside the sleeve. But that definitely gives you the impression that the armor itself is going to knit back together unless Obi-Wan just happened to chop right at the normal splits in the armor. Otherwise, you would think that his form, when he finally shows up again, would be sort of a patchwork where his armor isn't as pristine as it was before because some of it's been cut, and yeah, the flesh has healed, but not the armor. There's not enough visual cues in this style of animation to make that distinction clear.
But fortunately, we don't have to ponder Dirge anymore because he's just a massive stain all over the war room of Mutilist.
This is where the CSI team or the Law and Order SVU team comes in and starts taking samples with their little blue light and go, oh, I'm going to vomit.
It almost seems like the best way to beat this Dirge was to cut him up and then put the individual body parts inside of like separate containment units where they just can't physically find them, you know, find themselves to rejoin.
Stick his heart inside the dead man's chest.
Yeah, it's like stick that arm in that case and that arm in that case and the head in this case and then fly them out to five different planets so they cannot reform. Yeah, it's silly. It's silly.
Where's the Ziploc bag clone unit when you need them?
Yeah.
It would have been funny, though, if you separate them out and maybe there's like half of them over here and half of them over there and he really is a shapeshifter, not just something that can reassemble itself, and you get sort of two little half-sized dirges. So you cut them up and you get two little quarter-sized dirges out of each and you got all these like little tiny
Fantasia
dirges running around.
Something?
Yeah, something like that. And then Obi-Wan can stomp on them and then make a quip about making a mess again.
So Obi-Wan has the ground battle well at hand, and we shift to the space battle with Anakin, where he is mopping up the Mutilus space forces, which apparently are all Geonosian starfighters. And this was another case of where we saw this series very much play with the physics and the exaggeration of numbers.
I really like this battle. I like to get to see the clone pilots because they're one of my absolute favorites. So we got to see those. They're fun. And I really liked the little intro bit where they have Anakin kind of doing these right angle turns through this cityscape or something. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I like the imagery of that because it looks absolutely impossible and it kind of really highlights the idea that he is a really good pilot, that he can just follow these droids through that. I like this scene. This whole episode, the space battle, I really liked it.
Totally agreed. I think this is the one of those episodes that we need to help us understand, you know, not exactly, but Obi-Wan's comment in New Hope. You know, he was already a great star pilot, etc. And we really see why he's such the hero of the Clone Wars, why he excels so much as a Jedi. It just, you know, the legends and the stuff that's around Anakin. You see it here. And yeah, almost like Dirge, but this to me isn't like ridiculous and silly in so much as just, yeah, it's a little over the top to kind of match the nature of the animation. And we're going to obviously see a lot of examples of that. And we've already seen it, you know, with Kit Fisto. So it's kind of interesting that we're talking about all this together, because whereas Dirge was stupid and way over the top, this was just enough over the top to make it cool and yet paint the right picture about who Anakin is as a star pilot and eventually a commander in the Republic.
It felt very
absolutely
much like a video game to me. I mean, it seems sort of like one of those little games like, you know, Gradius or Life Force or whatever from the old systems, you know, maybe even Space Invaders. I mean, just it really sort of felt video game. But I am totally in agreement. It didn't seem like it went too far. I think the fact that the clones almost disobeyed him at one point and he had to tell him, you need to fire. Now he said, that's an order. The fact that they actually, you know, questioned it does show, I guess, a little bit of how right now he's not quite as respected by the clone troops. They haven't seen his prowess quite as much. And it's stuff like this that's going to get them to essentially believe in him more so than they would have before. I will say, I also like the sound effects that are used here. This ship, the Azure Angel that he created, which was named, by the way, by Leland Chi, he was sort of doing a play on Blue Angels and such, really is one of the coolest designs of a Jedi starfighter in the Clone Wars, and it's got that combination of sound effects of a Jedi starfighter and the pod racer, because of the way that it's designed, and they make really good use of that, so you sort of feel as though, yeah, you're hearing all these different sound effects, but this is the one that really stands out. It sort of draws you into the maneuvers as Anakin's doing them. I'm not sure if they had dropped those sound effects and just gone with the animation, sort of a silence in space thing, that it would have worked nearly as well.
Yeah, Nathan, I've always really enjoyed that design, and I liked how it kind of looked like Anakin got his starfighter his first day of Jedi school or whatever, Jedi flight school, and said, you know, I can make this better, and brought in his pod racing influence and gave him a really unique fighter. And that was always really cool, one of the really neat aspects that this series introduced. But Jerry, going back to what you mentioned, that one scene where he orders all the troops to fire their missiles across the bow of the cruiser, that's like my favorite scene in this episode, because that really shows the way that Anakin thought and was planning always a step ahead, because he could see, or he could sense that, like Qui-Gon said in episode one, why he seems to have such fast reflexes because of the Jedi trait. That was something that really stood out to me in that space battle. I've always really liked that scene. So this episode ends on a cliff, or this season actually ends on a cliffhanger. We have Anakin racing towards Asajj blasting, and Asajj racing towards Anakin blasting. And that's where they left it for 4 months. So we didn't know what was going to happen, if that was going to be all we saw, if we were going to get a few more episodes. So for a while, where they left it. And they left it in a true cliffhanger. That is something that they have not done yet with any seasons of our current Clone Wars.
I mean, yes and no. The thing I always thought was a little lame about it is that, you know, that's Asajj in there. You know, Anakin makes it to episode 3. I don't know. I didn't feel the cliffhanger per se, because it's not like you're wondering, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen? But you're right. They gave it an attempt. I mean, everything in our current Clone Wars has to wrap everything up into nice little bows. And sometimes those little bows aren't so nice. They're just like kind of rushed. And it's like, why couldn't you carry out the drama on this a little bit and extend the story? We want to see more. Or, you know, you just get these abrupt endings and awkward endings sometimes. So you're right. I like conceptually that they're trying to do things like that. And we obviously see it later on from seasons 2 into 3 with the whole, here's Grievous about to go mop up some Jedi. You know, who's going to survive? That was a scenario, and I'm getting ahead of ourselves here. That was a scenario. You don't really know which of those Jedi are going to make it. He could have slaughtered all of those Jedi for all we know. But here, Anakin, yeah, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I wasn't so much worried about Anakin. It was what they were going to do with this, as far as to me. I wasn't reading a whole lot of the comics at that point. I'm sure that probably a lot of the kids that were watching this weren't reading a whole lot of the comics. It was what was going to happen with this new Dark Jedi chick that they introduced. How are they going to eliminate her? Because she's got to be eliminated before episode 3. She never shows up, or at least pushed onto the back burner. What are they going to do to get rid of her so she's not hanging over Anakin's shoulder by the time episode 3 hits? Because, well, I guess at that time we didn't know she wasn't in episode 3, because episode 3 hadn't hit yet.
Anakin's going to beat her so hard she grows some eyeballs.
Yes, what are they going to do with the Sith apprentice that they just introduced?
I didn't think it was like a cliffhanger as much as just it cuts off so abruptly. Like my first reaction to it was just like, what? I was watching that. Put that back on, please. Like, what? And it was just that it stopped so quickly that I just wanted to see what happened next, as opposed to like, I wasn't concerned for Anakin, but it's so sharp. It's kind of like, wait, I was not done.
Does anybody consider that at any point in time in the Clone Wars series, they could kill off a major character and clone them? Like Anakin could be a clone. Darth Vader could have been a clone this whole time. Or Obi-Wan could be a clone. I mean, I always consider that when it comes to these cliffhangers, because they have clone technology. So basically anyone could die and they can clone them to be exactly the same as they were.
You can't clone Force users.
Starkiller.
There you go. Starkiller.
X1 and X2.
They go crazy.
X1 and X2 don't go crazy. Neither does Starkiller.
I don't know. What are X1 and X2 from?
X1 and X2 are from Battlefront Elite Squadron. They're the clones of, you know, what's his name? Rom Kota from...
Oh, wait. I gotta play DS games now to know everything continuity?
No, or PSP. But no, Rom Kota had a Padawan, Fallon Gray. Fallon Gray winds up on Kamino, I think, with Rom Kota at one point, where they're kind of like stranded there. They take cells from him, or a DNA sample or something like that, and they create X1 and X2, these Force-using clones for the Elite Squadron games, who wind up with Luke later on into the New Republic era, which was what caused the controversy back when The Force Unleashed 2 came out, where Rom Kota's talking about how you can't clone Jedi. Of course, we find out in the freaking comics you unlock, instead of the actual story, the truth behind whether Starkiller is really a clone or not in The Force Unleashed 2.
Is he?
Yeah, he is. We see the original Starkiller's body when it's being shown to the evil Starkiller clone, which means the good Starkiller clone is a clone. but they don't tell you in the novel, and they don't tell you in the comic, and they don't tell you in the mainstream game. You got to play the challenges to unlock this little comic that you can view in the cutscenes viewer, which is ridiculous.
I thought that was just, you know, for the bad ending, which means it's not really happening.
No, it's happening.
Oh, that's
so. Yes, you can clone forces, but I mean, they cloned Palpatine repeatedly. So Palpatine's using the Force, and you've got Ook Skywalker being cloned by Jorah Sabaoth's clone, Sabaoth being a clone in the Thrawn trilogy. It's that issue of clone madness and such.
Yeah.
Clone madness was supposed to apply to plenty of other clones as long as they were being cloned without the Force being used to keep them sane. Only we find that, of course, with the Clone Wars, that's not even remotely the case with the way they were cloning them on Kamino. So there's all kinds of bizarre dynamics to the cloning stuff. But I guess you're right, Baron, in that they could just kill off anybody and clone them so the cliffhanger could be a real cliffhanger, but they would ever do it because what you're looking at is it removes any sense of peril from the stories and it removes any sense of individuality and, in a sense, mortality from any of the characters. If you can just kill them off, it also blurs that line between our heroes and these clones and the moral issues involved with the clone army being essentially human droids, in a sense, in terms of the way they're used. I can't imagine them ever going that far unless they're creating a character who is either evil or a character who is meant to be some kind of deranged, altered version of a character for them to somehow face or to somehow reemerge later. So maybe with Ventress, perhaps. Maybe with Dirge, if he wasn't already goo. But I can't imagine them certainly doing with any of the heroic characters, which means that a cliffhanger like this one has the same amount of peril as throwing Han and Chewie into Death Troopers a few years back. You know there's going to be survival. It's a question of how does it play out, not who is going to survive or not. I'm right there with Jin, though. This didn't really feel like a cliffhanger to me at the time so much as it felt like, holy crap, what just happened? It just ended out of nowhere. Like, you're watching the clock as this episode's ending going, are they going to resolve anything? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Oh, crap, we just hit zero. I guess now we've got to wait months for the rest of the story. It was a Blair Witch ending for this season, basically.
Sorry, Nathan. I'm still thinking about your they could clone anyone. I can see it now. Yoda has to put a call into Dooku. We have to, you know, time out for 10 years because you guys just killed Anakin. And we have to wait for his clone to grow. Sorry. I digress. All right. Did anybody have anything else on these three episodes that they wanted to talk about? Or have we hit them?
No, but that would explain Yaddle being such a freaky looking chick if it was a clone of Yoda gone bad.
Wow.
You can imagine the Kaminoans walking out and giving Yoda a refund for the Jedi account because this one didn't turn out quite right. But here, it's okay. You can keep her. Just give her some duties. Make her feel special. She'll be okay.
You're describing it like a fast food restaurant. They make a cheeseburger and leave the onions on, make you a new one. But, go ahead and keep it because we'll just throw it away anyway.
Exactly.
Funny.
But, you know, overall, I'm really, you know, Jen, you'd mentioned earlier, I'm glad we saw those clone pilots because it's really, really been a long time since I've thought of you as our oddball. But that was kind of the origin of your alter ego, right?
Yes, it was. And they're still my favorites. So I like to see them from time to time. They don't get any love anymore, but I like them.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to our continuing conversation about the Clone Wars micro-series. I want to thank Jen, Barrett, Jerry, and Nathan for taking time out of their busy schedules to be with me this evening to talk about this.
Yep, thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Danke schön. I forget if I sang in this episode of The Last, so I had to throw that in there.
Thank you, Rockstar. It's always a pleasure.
All right, and we will see everybody back next week to talk about episodes 11, 12, and 13, or 1, 2, and 3 of Season 2.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
When he finally gets to the part of actually whipping it out, that sounded horrible.
Well, you know, excuse me while I whips this thing out.
Excuse me. All right. So we're all good. Everybody satisfied? Everybody happy?
Yeah.
Ecstatic.
Awful quiet, Barrett.
I haven't
disagreed with Nathan on anything in this portion of the episode.
We can hear you.
No, it was a wampa, and yeah, you're right. I did agree with him on his Facebook page that he's f***ing up tonight, but that's about it.
Can you two please focus on what we're doing? Come on. Your ADD is showing.
Nathan Jen, I would assume, has the most education of all of us. We just make fun of him. It's
all
so funny.
All the time, man.
That's funny.
Well, Barrett, no offense, but I am an engineer.
Right.
Yeah, Jerry has a useful degree. Mine's a complete piece of garbage.
He drives trains all day long.
Yeah.
Biden loves him.
It's just like 12 years after graduating, though, all I know how to do now is make a box.
That is so funny.
Right, to be fair, you guys would be far better at Jeopardy than I ever would